Hi, my name is Michael Creamer, and welcome to a podcast which is focused on the world of corporate real estate and everything that touches it. Today, I'm delighted to be talking to Rob Cross. Rob is an author, speaker, with a focus on people and coaching senior leaders. So today, the focus of the podcast is going to be about exactly that, people, leadership, and where that's going in a post-COVID world. Rob, welcome to the podcast.
Really great to be here.
Good. Nice of you to join us. Rob, before we start to talk about the property side of this in maybe a bit more detail, can you tell me how your career moved you into this whole area of, I think as you call it, unlocking human potential of leaders and their teams?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, really strangely, I started my life, my professional life, as a civil engineer in the Royal Australian Air Force, hence my accent. But very quickly, rather than work as a technical engineer, moved into supporting leaders and their teams. And I think that was driven heavily by the fact that I was deeply curious and wanted to poke my nose into things. And some senior officers didn't like that, as you can imagine. Some senior officers really did, and then dragged me into all these weird and wonderful projects. And eventually I ended up running internal consulting teams for the Air Force to help the senior leaders, so the one stars and above, really make sense of their role as leaders. And if you can imagine, these individuals were mostly fighter jet pilots, as you'd expect, and yeah, they'd been recruited and trained to be Top Gun, and then all of a sudden found themselves promoted to be in charge of, you know, large numbers of people, you know, multifaceted organization, complex supply chains, budgets, and all that wonderful stuff. And a lot of them really struggled with their role. So it was my job to help them with that. And eventually in 2004, moved back to the UK because this is where I was born. And since then, I've worked across a range of big blue chip companies and worked right across the world helping leaders and their teams. And that's included companies like British Telecom, The Prudential, Kingfisher, a Korean-owned engineering company, a part of the Reed Elsevier Group also, and then eventually ended up as an operational HR director in a FTSE listed company. And I guess to sort of round that story off and get to the point of why human potential is that actually, as I've spent the last 20 years looking at leaders and their teams, it's really struck me that something is missing in classic leadership development. And what I mean by that is, every time I looked at it, is we seem to be spending all this time trying to help people unlock potential by telling them what they should do, how they should think, how they should behave, what they should say, etc. But actually, it never gets to the core of what really drives human behavior. And so what I've done is gone through and done a heap of research and really focused on, well, what does drive human behavior and how do we tap into that? And how do we tap into that in a way that truly unlocks human potential?
Great. And going to come back to that in a little bit, but just before we do, I kind of want to split this into two in a way. But if we talked about leadership and the things that you've seen in a, let's call it a pre-COVID world, so up until March 2019, what was some of the, what did good leadership look like then? And then obviously what I want to do is then maybe see whether there's a contrast between that and maybe what it needs to look like, hopefully any day now, but certainly later this year.
Yeah, let's hope any day now. I guess for me, the fundamentals of good leadership, especially in relation to how you unlock the potential of others, keep them engaged, you know, really get the best out of them, I don't think has changed pre or post COVID. You know, and having worked across the globe, I don't think it matters where you are in the globe, what sector, etc. I think the fundamentals are all the same. I think in the pre-COVID world, what I really became frustrated by is that I think we had moved into this place of sort of two aspects. One is we've become fixated on demonizing leaders or people in leadership roles. We're looking to them for answers, and when we don't get it, yeah, we blame them for everything. And I think for the most people I meet in leadership roles at all levels, they're trying to do the best job that they can. And somehow we've ended up in this place where we seem to just want to blame them for all the ills in the world. The second dimension aspect is one of confusion. I think a lot of people in leadership roles pre-COVID were really confused about their role. You know, they're being constantly bombarded by all this stuff about what great leaders do. And often that confusion is accentuated by what I think is the prevailing model of leadership, which is what they call the great man model. In other words, you know, to be a leader, you need to be the all-seeing, all-knowing, heroic character who has all the answers. And I think if COVID has taught us nothing else, the fact is that that model is just fundamentally flawed and it doesn't exist. And so all of a sudden, yeah, that confusion, I think, has been accentuated by the fact that actually, well, I can't be that. Well, what does leadership really mean? And so for me, you know, all the leaders I've worked with, I think are all trying to do the best job they can. But this mix of demonizing and confusion, I think, keeps them in a place where they're not being as effective as they potentially could be, especially in terms of unlocking their own potential and unlocking the potential of others.
So if we talk a little bit about some of those things, because I'd agree with you, they're being bombarded from every side. And just to pick something that may seem a bit obtuse, but I think has a bearing on this, is around technology. I mean, certainly in my career, I've seen, you know, if I go back 5-7 years, technology as we know it today and as it's going to become AI, robotics, the use of the internet, email, I mean, it's fundamentally changed the way in which we work. And we've seen some of that exacerbated now during COVID. So from a leadership point of view, are things like that, those sort of disruptors, if I can call technology a disruptor, or at least it's changed the way in which we all work, does that have a impact on the way people lead, or are you saying the fundamentals are still the same?
I think the fundamentals are still the same, and I'll keep coming back to this point, especially as we get into the post-COVID world. But I think your point around technology is absolutely right, because whilst I think the fundamentals are the same, because ultimately we're all humans, you know. And I think what I discovered as I kept digging beyond all the classic theories about how you describe human behavior, what drives it, yeah, what I got to the core of is, regardless of gender, race, etc., we're all humans at heart, and there's a certain range of what I call existential human dilemmas that drive our behavior. I think when you lift it back up and say, okay, so what are the influences for then how we perform the role of leader? In my book, which I released in 2020, called The Great Man is Dead, A New Philosophy for Leadership, I called out three mega trends, which I think are fundamentally impacting the environment in which we need to practice our leadership. And they were geopolitics, you know, and, you know, I think from 2016 onwards, you know, geopolitics was just constantly creating confusion for anybody in leadership roles about what was going to happen in the world. Technology, which I'll come back to. And then climate change, which I think is then going to shape the post-COVID world in terms of how we respond to that. And I think from a technology perspective, I think as human beings, we have this paradoxical relationship with technology, which then really influences, you know, our approach to leadership. And that paradox is a mix of, you know, a desire for freedom from it. So a desire to, and a yearning for a simpler life where we're no longer sitting in front of Zoom screens, you know, having this device as a new limb that's you know, attached itself to our bodies, through to then actually needing technology to help us better understand the environments we're operating in and bring control to those environments. And so I think that from a leadership perspective, that, you know, we're constantly grappling with that paradox of yearning for freedom from it, but also needing it to support us in our roles, that I think is going to increase. And as a final point on that, there's no doubt that technology is going to be a continuing disruptor to the organizations we operate in, and how we work going forwards. And, you know, I think the more I'm seeing how AI is developing, et cetera, that could potentially defunct whole career paths, you know, and change the nature of what different professions are going to be in the future.
Yeah, I'd agree. And I think a couple of points and then a question. So, you know, if we think about coming out of this COVID crisis, and I'm going to talk specifically about office space, but I think about office space and cities, and I think about the design of office space, if you like, pre-COVID, it sort of bears all the hallmarks of the Industrial Revolution, and making us sit at rows and rows of desks, you know, and everything that's been parodied from Gilbert cartoons and so on. And now we need something completely different. And technology, as you've rightly said, is allowing many things to change which are beneficial to us. But at the end of the day, as you said earlier, we're creatures of habit, but I hope that means we don't go back to what we had. But we're also social animals, and we need something better than perhaps we had. And COVID is hopefully the catalyst to that. So I guess as you sort of think about people and the people part of this, how do you see that from a, if you like, from a work context and leadership? In other words, we've now got this bifurcated way of which we are all quite capable of working, some of it from home, some of it from the office, some of it from, let's call it, a third place. Does that add to the complexity of and change leadership?
Again, to the point of the fundamentals, I think being consistent, I think it absolutely does add to the complexity about how you practice leadership. And what I mean by practicing leadership is, how do you bring those fundamentals to life in the context that you're operating, you know, where you've got hybrid working environments, different pressures impacting how and where we work, et cetera, et cetera. And so for me, I think what COVID has usefully done is it's caused us all to pause. And I think it's rehumanized working. And what I mean by that is, all of a sudden we are looking into the lives of people, because actually we can see their homes behind them as they're on the Zoom calls or the Teams calls. It's reinforced this really deep human desire to connect with people. It's caused leaders to really focus on over-communicating. It's helped people develop a greater willingness to adapt and recognize that they can adapt. And it's helped us just pause and reflect on the fact that we are all humans and we're all impacted by this, you know, in different ways for different reasons, but we are all impacted. And I think from that respect, it's actually provided a really powerful catalyst for us. I think the challenge for me going forwards will be, how do organizations and people in leadership roles and all of us as individuals use that pause that's been created to properly reflect on the lives that we want to live. And, you know, I think in our initial conversation, one of the trends that I really see emerging is this sense of what I call existential guilt, you know, in the fact that, you know, many people are no longer having excessive commutes, you know, distracting themselves with their devices as they're pressed up against other people on the trains as they're heading to their workplace, is that they've had more time to think and go, hang on, I don't want to go back to that. I don't want to live that life anymore. But then they go, but what life do I want to live? You know?
And that is definitely an existential crisis.
Absolutely.
I think you raise a really interesting point. And I enjoyed reading your book. And, you know, I had a number of things that I sort of pulled out of it that I found really useful. And I think now, if I'm looking at this post-COVID world, and this is going to be kind of like a two-part question, but I see, and a lot of companies now are talking about, what is their purpose? And purpose has to have two parts to it. And we take the profit element, in, at least in the Western world, for granted, meaning all companies are in business to make money, unless they're charities. So the purpose of a company is to make profit, however you define that. But then it's got to be profit and something. And I think this existential guilt or crisis is part of that. And so, you know, how do leaders, because I think there's a corporate answer to that, and then there's an individual answer to that. And if we start with the corporate answer, and then maybe we can drop into the people part. Do you see companies thinking more about, you know, I guess, are corporations having an existential crisis as well as people? Maybe that's my question.
Yeah, I think there's a particular concept in my book where I talk about the paradox of self-awareness. And I think this is, it works at every level, from organization through to individual. I think those organizations supported by their leaders who are consciously thinking about this, who on the basis of their own lived experience are saying, actually, there's got to be something more to this, or, you know, feeling their conscience about what's happening in society, you know, across the mega trends that I referenced, and especially global warming and climate change, I think that is creating an existential crisis for them. And for me, you would read this in my book, is that actually what I focus on is this concept of three questions, which are fundamentally, who am I, why am I here, and how will I lead and live? And the reason I focus on those is because if you come back to this concept of purpose, and I think you're absolutely right, because even charities have a commercial imperative with them. They can't exist without raising money, even if the raising of that money is for some, you know, not purely for profit sake or shareholder returns, it's about the contribution they're making with it. And so I think that commercial imperative is central to it, whether we like it or not. But then this something else, I think, is also critical. I think what's gone wrong, if you go back to the pre-COVID world, is that across the corporate world, you know, across society, we got swept up in this Simon Sinek start with why frenzy, where we all needed some deep-seated, life-changing purpose. And unfortunately, I think what that's created, and I call this out in the book too, is that whilst I love some of the concepts that he talks about, actually it's created a lot of sort of beauty pageant contestants. And what I mean by that is, you know, in the beauty pageants, which I'll openly admit I don't watch, but you sort of see the skits of is say, well, what are you going to do with your reign? They say, well, I'm going to solve world hunger or bring, you know, world peace or whatever it might be. And unfortunately, when we're in that place, we get swept up in trying to create some life, you know, world-changing purpose, as opposed to actually coming back and saying, let's get really clear about what's the authentic identity we want to show up as, which is who am I? Then let's get to the point of saying, well, what's really important for us at individual, team, and organizational level? And then to your point around you know, some of the way that we're structuring our world, and I think that goes, yeah, if you think about it systemically, it goes through everything about working environments, property, technology, ways of working, policies, processes, all of that kind of stuff. It comes back to saying, and how are we going to live those things? And so for me, whether you're asking, you know, in the face of that existential crisis, whether you're asking the three questions at organizational level to try and consciously design your organization for the post-COVID world, at team level or at individual level, that they give you a different perspective and a more grounded perspective in terms of focusing on identity, purpose, and practice for how you're going to what I call show leadership, which is basically engage with the world in a way that brings a positive contribution to it.
I heard on the news this morning that Unilever has announced that by 2030, they're going to ensure that everyone in their supply chain is paid a living wage. So that means obviously not just Unilever employees, but the supply chain that they engage with. And, you know, the CEO was, you know, explaining that this builds on what they've been doing over the last 10 years, which is around sustainability. And he says it's also, you know, it's not only good for the planet and good for people, it's good for my business. And it's good for my business because we'll get associated with doing the right thing and having a purpose. So it seems to me that businesses are beginning, or the best businesses, I should say, are shifting, if you like, a bit of their focus towards what they stand for. And it can, and you've mentioned climate change, which I think is obviously super important at the moment. And it can be, we've got the whole diversity, equity, inclusion going on and becoming something that every single company has to take seriously if they want to stay in business and continue to make that profit. I guess where I'm going, it seems to me that people, as long as they have choice, will gravitate towards those businesses that do describe what their purpose is. And that's not their mission and it's not their vision. I think purpose is something very different. When you're talking to the CEOs about their leadership and or people as individuals rather than as businesses, do you see that shift also happening?
Yeah, without a doubt. And if you come back to the fact that this whole COVID crisis has been such a, in spite of the tragedy, and I'd hate to diminish that, it's been such a powerful catalyst for us to think differently. A lot of the conversations I have with leaders is them pausing and reflecting on their own sense of self and again, their own identity and how they need to show up as leaders, their own sense of purpose and the contribution they want to make. And then how do they bring that to life through their own leadership practice? And that naturally flows into then, you know, the same dimensions for their organization. I think that the challenge that I have, and it comes back to where we started the conversation around the confusion with respect to leadership, is that I think what companies like Unilever, P&G and others are doing is truly inspiring. When you come back to the mid-cap organizations, which make up a significant number of businesses around the world, yeah, their ability to translate those same things into their action becomes confusing, you know. And I think for me, often what happens is that leaders become a bit paralyzed by the concept of, well, how do we do that? What would carbon neutral mean for us? What would zero waste or living wage, et cetera, mean for us across our supply chain, et cetera? And I think that to help leaders do that, you've almost got to come back to them as individuals and get them to pause and reflect and then think about the journey that they want to go on and how that integrates with that, you know, broader purpose and strategy for their business. But it's got to start with them in terms of what's really important to them. Where does their sense of purpose and meaning come from? And how do they bring that to life through the organization that they run and the work that they do?
Yeah, that's a really interesting point. I think, you know, as we sort of start to wrap up and think about where things are going, I guess a couple of questions for you. But one is, do you think that as we come out of COVID, you know, country by country, region by region, the default will be back to how things were in terms of how people run their businesses and how individuals react? I think we all hope for it to be different, but do you see that at the sort of individual level that you just described, being able to drive a really interesting change in the way people think about their lives, about, you know, what you might call compassionate leadership rather than old-fashioned leadership, if I can put it that way? I'm sure you're hopeful that that's the case, but do you think it's going to happen, or do you think as creatures of habit we're going to go down the easier path?
Yeah, I think it's a great question. My fear is, as creatures of habit, that's where we end up. If I was a betting man, you know, I could talk for hours on this one, but in summary, if I was a betting man, I'd say we'll end up in a 60-40 split, flipping one way or the other, sort of old versus new. I think, and that's, you know, back into the office, working from home, hybrid working, et cetera, et cetera. I think the biggest dilemma for us, especially across modern Western society, is that something has been unlocked. This existential crisis, this desire for more, this, hang on, I don't want to just go back to, you know, pressed up against people, distracting myself with my device to get through the commute. I want something more. My fear is, and this is where things like the three questions become hopefully useful to people, even if just on what I described, who am I, why am I here, and how will I lead and live, is that I don't think people have necessarily got the framework to really pause and reflect on what they want differently in their life. They know what they don't want, but I'm not sure that we're doing enough to really help them consciously redesign their lives in the way that they want to. And so I have a deep desire that we don't go back to, you know, life as it was, and that we find a more human, authentic, healthy way of living and working. But I think we've got to better support people to make those conscious choices, and better support leaders to design their organizations to support those choices, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it does. And actually, final question, it's a bonus question, but you made me think of something I wanted to ask you. Do you think it's the job, or it's the right, or whatever word you might choose, of the employer to help the employee do that? In other words, is it reasonable to expect companies to think about their employees not just as the people who turn up and do a good day's work for them, but also how they find that? If I can encapsulate your three things, but the who am I, why am I here, and how do I want to live? Is it up to the individual to do that and the companies to hope they are doing it, or do companies have a role to play in that? Because I think that talks a lot to some of the property issues that we're faced with.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's a real dilemma. Kind of the starting point I have with here is that the company is just a group of individuals. Yeah, and hopefully if it's a good company, they're all working together and all passionate and all purpose-driven. And so actually, regardless of whether you're the CEO or frontline, I think these fundamental questions, which help you tap into, you know, the things that drive human behavior, these existential human dilemmas that I described at the start, I think are present for all of us, you know, and we're starting to want to ask them and answer them. I think companies who don't do that, I think will create a risk. They'll either go down the gimmicky phase of some of the lesser engagement or health and well-being initiatives that you're seeing sort of, you know, promoted around. And whilst I think there is a lot of merit to it, some of it is purely gimmick. And so for me, you know, my whole philosophy is, I think, whilst, you know, probably a bit dismissive of what I just said in terms of health and well-being, I think a lot of that's good, but it's what I call a house built on sand. So I can help you focus on all these things around mental health. I can help you focus on health and well-being and et cetera. But if you're not building that on a foundation of a really solid understanding of your identity, purpose, and practice for how you show leadership, and show leadership is, how do I really consciously invest my energy on making a greater difference to all those around me, including myself, then a lot of those things are just lovely initiatives that when the pressure comes on, get drift off to the background. The really solid companies, the really solid leaders who are already confident in their sense of identity and purpose will recognize the importance of those things and promote them as such, and then make sure that there's a solid foundation under that house of these other initiatives.
Great, Rob, that's super, really interesting. And as you said, you and I know could talk about this for hours. I'm going to bring it to a close there. Really appreciate you coming on to the podcast and sharing your thoughts. As you've said, you do have a book out that I would highly recommend because I have read it front to back, which I can't say I've done for every management book I've started to read.
That's a compliment.
Well, for me it is anyway. Really appreciate your insights and thoughts. Thank you for joining me.
Thank you very much.